It's 1 o'clock Central Time, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the Transportation Policy, Transit, and Oversight Committee meeting for January 28th. We are assembling a quorum, so we'll hold off on the motion to approve the minutes, but I would like to move quickly to start the meeting so we can maximize our time with the Metropolitan Council. That is our only agenda item today. Members, there are some other important stakeholders in transit in the state in addition to the Met Council. One is the County's Transit Improvement Board, and we'll be hearing from them, we're hoping, next week, as well as MnDOT's Rural Transit Office. MnDOT does the rural transit. As you know, the Metropolitan Council handles that in the metro area. We were originally going to hear a bill today, but that was withdrawn, and so I'd like to remind members to this time of session is a very good time to get your bills heard, and we'd love to get those bills into Ms. Mann, and then we can process them and get them on the agenda. Finally, the staff has reminded me once again on our wireless communication rule here. We understand that it has been interfering with our recordings, and especially members, we're encouraging. These microphones apparently are very sensitive and pick up the communication. The communication doesn't go on the tape, but there is some interference and static, so we'd like to remind you and members of the public as well to turn off the cell phones and the wireless communication devices. So, with that, we are very pleased to have Chair Bell and Arlene McCarthy, and if there are members of the public that, since part of what we're going to do is to look over the transportation plan for the Met Council, there are members of the public that would want to comment on that or weigh in one way or the other, please let us know. We'd be happy to take your testimony and your comments about this as well for the public record. So with that, Mr. Bell, welcome to the committee. Very pleased to have you here, and Mr. Bell has been a great advocate for the Central Corridor over the last year, and we appreciate your work on that, and we also appreciate the fact that the Met Council has been able to take some public comments about their policy plan and incorporate those. So members, if you do have questions, what we'll do is have our presenters get through their overview, and then we'll break for member questions and answers, if that's okay. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be with you again. We have a number of things that we want to touch on today. Most importantly is the transportation policy plan, which, as you indicated, Ms. McCarthy will go over. Before I introduce that, I just want to say a very brief word about our budget, our upcoming fiscal year 10 and 11 budget. I won't go into much detail, but I know there's significant interest about that, as there is interest regarding the economic stimulus package. As you may be aware, Mr. Chair, our budget deficit now is projected to be $45 million. This, of course, is a moving target, and we will have firmer numbers based upon the February forecast. We are looking at a range of options to address the deficit as it currently presents itself, and those options include possibly a fare increase, though quite candidly that would be a lower priority that clearly cannot be off the table. We're looking at route restructuring. We are looking at the stimulus dollars that potentially will be coming down from Washington, and I'll speak about that in a second. We're looking at a reallocation of some of the levies that we have, up to and including the livable communities levy, and we are also looking at the use of some of our reserves. One thing that we are somewhat fortunate is we have ran our transit system somewhat conservatively and have some reserves that we can put to use. I would be happy to return to this committee when we have more detailed information on both what the deficit will be, what the stimulus package will be, and how we might use some of those resources and as we evolve our thinking on how to address it. The stimulus package itself, right now, we anticipate that Minnesota, if in fact it passes, and this is an if, it is of course also a moving target, $86 million would come to the state for transit, $69 million for transit capital, $17 million for six guideways. In the House, the total amount for transit would be $9 billion, and we discussed this information this afternoon. $6 billion would go for transit capital assistance, $2 billion for six guideways, and $1 billion for federal transit capital investment grants. The Senate's number right now is $8.4 billion, and of that amount, we would get $86 billion. How will we divide out? For the main area of discussion today is our transportation policy plan. Ms. McCarthy and her staff, I think, have done an excellent job in putting that together. As you indicated, Mr. Chair, we had a number of comments about that, and we took those comments seriously. We actually revised the policy plan based upon those. The comment period was September 8th through November 6th. Mr. Chair, we had six open house events for the policy plan, which we do every 4 years. We had up to 20 people that attended them, and we received 500 comments regarding our transportation policy plan. I'd like to introduce Ms. McCarthy to go into more detail of the specifics of that plan, and then, Mr. Chair, we would be willing to entertain any questions regarding the transportation policy plan or our budget.
Thank you very much, Chair Bell, and I'm glad that you raised the issue of the stimulus package. As my understanding, that's being voted on today in the House. It's also my understanding that Congressman Ellison is, along with Congressman Nadler from New York, are offering an amendment to increase the transit share. So we hope that that vote is positive for us. And at the end of maybe Ms. McCarthy's presentation, to the extent that either of you are aware of any, I know there's no earmarks in this bill, but could share with us some of your thoughts about the stimulus money and how it might be utilized in our region would be helpful. But again, you're absolutely right, Ms. Chair Bell, that it is very much in flux, and we really won't know until congressional action's completed really what we're going to get and how much. And
I would be happy to, Mr. Chair.
So thank you very much, Ms. McCarthy. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and committee members. Yes, I'll go through the policy plan today, and please ask questions as we go along. A little bit of background here for some of you not familiar with it. It's a multimodal plan that we must do. This is a federal requirement. And so the modes that we look at are highways, transit, airports, freight, biking, and pedestrians. And I'll spend most of the time today on the highways and transit after we get through some of the foundational pieces. The Met Council is what's known as the federally designated metropolitan planning organization. That is the entity across the country in metro areas that does the long-range plan. We do not do this in isolation. We work very closely, in particular, with MnDOT, MAC, the TAB, and its many committees, its technical advisory committee, and then other task forces. And then, as Chair Bell explained, there's a significant outreach. We work with technical staff at counties and cities, and then also the public outreach. We must have an update every 4 years, at least every 4 years, in order to receive the significant federal money that we do. This region really gets quite a bit of federal money, and we must have this. It also gives us an opportunity, quite frankly, to reflect what has changed in the previous 4 years. And we'll walk through some of those changes here in a minute. And it lets us reflect new funding that's been received since 2004, which is when the previous plan had been adopted. For example, in this time frame, new funding we had was through the constitutional amendment passed in 2006 regarding motor vehicle sales tax. We also had the UPA funding, very significant, $133 million last year in federal funds, plus the state match that you provided to that. And then most recently, the quarter cent sales tax. So quite a bit of new funding to reflect in this plan. On finance, just some, one point that many people really need to understand is that when we do our federal plan, a federal requirement is that it must be fiscally constrained. Therefore, we have to estimate the revenues that we anticipate to receive from a capital and operating perspective, both. Of course, we don't know the exact funding we're going to get. This is a long-term plan out to 2030. So we use reasonable estimates, and that is our basis. We simply can't add and say we will build more projects and fund more projects than our funding streams would expect us to be able to do. We do depend on MnDOT to do the estimates for the highway funds, and then the Met Council estimates the transit funds. Many of the issues, I know as your committee works with these issues, you're very familiar. There is a lack of funding for significant highway expansion. You're very familiar with the volatility of the MVEST, which impacts both highway and transit funding. We continue to have a revenue source lacking to really grow our base bus operations. And the gas prices fluctuate very much. That, of course, impacts demand and vehicle miles traveled, and therefore the amount of gasoline sold impacts the gas tax receipts here in the region. Last year, those building projects really saw a huge increase in material costs. The cost of construction exceeded by quite a bit on normal inflation, and that really has an impact particularly on our capital projects. And then the future of federal revenues is very uncertain. We do anticipate a new transportation bill will be authorized in 2009, but we don't know what that will be, and so there's uncertainty there. Next, I'd like to just talk about regional mobility. This is a map that is in our policy plan. It's something that the Fed looks to see and is rather standard across the country. What we're trying to do is anticipate what congestion will be looking ahead. So this is based on our regional modeling, what we think will be in 2030, the principal arterials, in essence the highway system. And you can see that almost every line, not quite every line, but the vast majority are a heavy blue, which means in 2030 we would anticipate that they would have congestion. And for the purpose of this map, that is defined as the road for at least 1 hour a day would have more traffic than the road is designed to carry. Or, for example, speeds would be less than 45 miles an hour compared to the posted speed. So it is quite a bit of road network that will be congested in 2030.
Mrs. McCarthy, I'm sorry to interrupt your flow here, mm-hmm. but I did want to acknowledge and thank, we have a group of 12th grade students from Princeton High School here, and they're participating in the Historical Society Capitol Historic Sites Voice of the People program, so welcome. We really appreciate that you're here, and we are, you know, talking about a very important issue, transportation, and I think we're going to hear from your congressman tomorrow. I believe Congressman Oberstar is coming in, and maybe he'll tell us about a train between here and Duluth, and that'd be a good thing for you guys. So anyway, thank you very much for being here, and please proceed, Ms. McCarthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Before she continues and leaves that particular topic, I'd like to follow up a little bit. The congestion levels, do they reflect any transit lines that are proposed? Is that after those lines are in?
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, they do. What the regional model programs in, shall we say, the projects that we can fund. So this map here reflects the improvements that we would intend to make in the meantime, both transit and highway type improvements. Regional mobility, kind of the big picture here across all of the modes, you're familiar that the region intends to receive an additional 1 million residents by 2030. Travel in general has been increasing faster than our highway expansion. That's why we're experiencing greater congestion. Now, recalling that map that you just saw a moment ago, if we wanted to solve all congestion, it would cost 20 times more money than we project that we will have available. And while I don't think anyone would say to solve congestion completely is reasonable, it lets you understand the order of magnitude that we're talking about here if we did want to do that. And then the available road funding, with the significant new funds passed at the last legislative session, will be put to good use, including the bridge rehab. But it's important to know that the large system we have already today does take up quite a bit just to preserve or maintain it. And that is a top priority here of our transportation policy plan. So as we work through essentially 2 years of developing this policy plan, the emphasis is shifting. Previously, we focused on fixing congestion, had a small number of very large projects, and the large projects were contemplated to fix congestion in that localized area of the project. But what we're doing here, the council is shifting away from fixing congestion more to a managing congestion approach. So how we want to tackle that in this plan is to really optimize our highway investments. We're focusing on moving people, not just cars. Therefore, we need to be extremely strategic in how we invest our highway dollars as well as our transit dollars for expansion. We really want to promote land use that is transportation efficient, and there's a new chapter in our policy plan this year giving more attention to that. And then we continue to promote the alternatives such as walking, biking, carpooling, and telecommuting. So kind of the bottom line here is we want to provide more choices beyond driving alone in an automobile. This map here, this is data from 2006. It has some data from MnDOT as well as transit. And in general, the red is transit ridership on a corridor, and the yellow is ridership in automobiles. And what I'd like you to look at is the one there on 394. It's the only vertical bar with blue in it, and that is on the 394 corridor. And the blue is the people carried on that hot lane in vehicles. And then the red, of course, is the transit. But what you can see is if you add the red and the blue together on that one lane, which is a joint highway transit solution, we carry more people in that one lane in the peak hour than we do in the other two lanes. So that's a really great solution of a high person throughput type of a solution. And this is the type of thing that you will see emphasized in our policy plan, looking for solutions that move people and that look at all modes. Now, Mr. Chair, I'm going to go through some info on highways and then we'll get to transit. Just in summary, we do have growing demand for travel, and we simply have a limited capacity on our highways. Again, our gasoline costs are unknown. Looking ahead, they've really fluctuated a lot just in the last 6 months. And that's interesting with gasoline. It impacts your congestion because it impacts how much people choose to drive on their optional trips. But then it also, as I said earlier, impacts the amount of fuel purchased and therefore the gas tax receipts. And that's very important to the revenues anticipated by MnDOT for their highway system. And as you've heard in the last year, there are increasing costs to maintain the existing system with the cost of materials. And again, the first priority, as designated by the legislature, is to rehabilitate the state's bridges.
Representative Leader, Chairman Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. McCarthy, I wonder if that's not quite correct, because the only thing the legislature stipulated was using the $350 million specifically for bridges, but we didn't say it had to be first, because they still got their normal highway funding. And I know that's been a contention we had with MnDOT, and that's been kind of their interpretation, and we've been saying that's not true. And it basically isn't true, because highway funding in the bill is separate from the bridge bonding portion. And this only relates to the bridge bonding portion that should be used first for those fracture critical bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would make a difference in your planning.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Leader, and thank you, Chair. I think that in our plan we did follow and we detailed the Tier 1 and Tier 2 bridges as outlined by the legislature. So perhaps the wording here isn't specific, but I do think in the plan we have followed the deadline, the timetable outlined in the legislature for the bridges for the Tier 1 and Tier 2 definitions as they came out.
I think we still got a little confusion on that, because I'm trying to say is that the bridges and highway funding are separate there. It doesn't say you have to build all the bridges before you do any highways. That's about a simple statement that way.
I think, Mr. Chair, I understand what you're saying. It's relative to the different revenue sources of the funds. Is that correct?
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that gets to the point. I think the point Representative Leader is making is that the bonding was directed towards bridges.
Yes.
And the significant increase in the cash flow was not restricted to bridges.
Thank you for that clarification. Mm-hmm. And you could proceed, Ms. McCarthy. And I know that we're about halfway through your presentation, and I think you should take as much time as you need, but I would like to make sure that we have enough time for a good question and answer. We have at least two people from the public that have indicated an interest in testifying as well.
Let's skip the slide here. As you can see, this just outlines the funding sources, and this is exclusive of the bridge repairs that we just talked about. Again, highlight here how much preservation takes of the system. It's definitely the largest funding demand on our system. We do, even though there isn't as much money as people would probably like for the highway system, we are able to afford quite a bit with our plan. Just would like to highlight here that 4 of the Tier 1 bridges and 26 other bridges in the metropolitan area will be rehabilitated with our anticipated funding. Very important is that we're able to meet the preservation needs of our highway system. We also have program safety investments. This is a federal requirement to have a certain level of safety investments. And then we're able to implement more of our low-cost congestion management projects. These are those projects that are kind of focused on bottlenecks, small projects, but you do a spot improvement, so to speak, and can really help your corridor. And then the previous plan had about a dozen very major projects around the metro area. And what we say in this plan, and MnDOT will be the lead on this, is reassessing those projects. We definitely need a major an improvement there, but the idea is, can we streamline them a little bit, maybe bring the scope down somewhat, still accomplish definitely the primary purpose of the project, to do it a little bit more cost effectively, and then have more funds for more projects.
Excuse me, Representative Morrow had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCarthy, if I could just ask you on, it's either on congestion management or expansion, do any of the plans include expanding or adding lanes within the Metcalf area? And if so, could you describe that a little bit? Because what we're hearing from MnDOT in Greater Minnesota is we're reluctant to expand lanes, to add lanes, even if it's for safety purposes. So I'd like to know, is Metcalf adding lanes?
Mr. Representative Hornstein and Representative Morrow, yes, there are some of the even low-cost congestion management projects. It's not a lane for a very long segment, but there, for example, there's cases of where you have a merge lane, and then at your next interchange you might have an exit ramp, and maybe between those two you would add a third lane for some continuity, and it adds capacity in that spot. And so they're not major multi-mile type of expansion projects in general, but That was a point, actually, in response to feedback, we realized in our draft we really didn't emphasize enough that we were kind of short-selling the plan and not explaining that there are some capacity improvements in those projects.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is just a map. I won't go over it, but it points out those projects that I just mentioned in the previous slide. And I failed to mention at the start, Mr. Chair, that our entire plan is on the council's website, so you could download any of these maps if people wanted more info or to see them closer. This map just shows those major expansion projects that we will be reassessing, again, working with MnDOT over the next year or so. And then, while Chair Bill just speaks to the economic stimulus, we do want you to know that near the end of our process, as the idea of an economic stimulus package was being raised in 2008, what we did is make our policy plan flexible to accommodate any economic stimulus funds for one of those major projects. There's a federal process and, quite frankly, quite a few hoops to go through to make the plan federally compliant, and so we didn't want to be caught where we have to go through a long public process recognizing the time sensitivity. So what we can do, if the region chooses, is to fund one of those major projects. Again, that's if the funding comes through for that. So the good news is we do working with the MPCA, and we're very grateful for the quick turnaround by the MPCA with us, is that we do meet what's called the air quality conformity analysis, and that's very important to the federal government.
And just members to clarify, and I'll call on Representative Holbrook here, this is the stimulus monies for regional highways.
Yes,
that
correct.
You're describing, and this is very interesting. We have 12 highways in the Transportation Improvement Plan, and we're looking at one. And if you could just, you know, briefly talk about what you envision the process for how that one highway project will be selected. Does that go through your TAB board, or what would be the process? How would the public be engaged and the legislature? Because I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest in what project is ultimately selected.
Well, Mr. Chair, the first thing is, as Chair Bell mentioned, this is very much in flux, and what the rules and requirements associated with the money come out will guide what projects are even eligible. I wouldn't begin to think that all 12 projects would be eligible given the timing, you know, the design is in various stages. So that type of thing, the timeline associated with implementing the money will be a factor. Some of the money on highways will come directly to MnDOT for their process, and then other of the highway money will come through the TAB process. So TAB has been meeting to discuss principles and priorities, and also to be able to accelerate their process in the event there's timing issues with making a decision. So when we know more about the funds, I think that is when the final process will be established.
Okay, and members, I think this is a very important topic, and we're now getting some questions about it. So, you know, anything about the stimulus as it relates to highways, this is a good time to ask it. So I'll call on Representative Holbrook, Representative Morrow, and Representative Davis at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has there been any discussion about whether you do one big project or a bunch of little projects? I mean, what I'm hearing from the contractors is that, you know, we did the major bridge, we have Lakota, you know, the big guys are, you know, having opportunities to bid for work, and what the average small business owner that's in the highway construction industry is looking for is the $10 to $14 million projects with interchanges. Has there been any discussion around the value of economic stimulus, big, huge projects with one, you know, one company putting it all together versus the ability to move this around and get some of our smaller business operators who are really hurting in this economy, give them some opportunity for work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, I think there has been discussion of that, as well as, again, it will come down to the rules at job creation. What will their, how firm, shall we say, will be requirements regarding job creation? Another issue is materials. We don't want to artificially escalate prices in any one sector, shall we say, and have high prices on the work that we do by focusing it all on pavement or something like that. So there are many different perspectives, I think it's fair to say, that have been discussed.
Chair Bell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, the discussions that I've participated in regarding that very subject go to not only the legitimate point that you're raising about the stimulus nature of any particular activity, but also what the most pressing need is in the region and trying to marry the two. I anticipate, but couldn't say for certain, given the point that Ms. McCarthy made, that we don't know what the rules of the road are, no pun intended, for how these dollars are to be used, but that it will be a mixture of both. I think that the state's position would be it would be wise to do one or hopefully more of the major projects that are really out there and that the public is metaphorically pounding the table to get done. But I think that there is some concerns and need for lack of a better term, regional balance as well. And so that could, of course, be addressed in smaller projects. And so if you were to ask me to handicap it, I would say that there will be a mixture of both, that along with a major project or more, there will be some smaller projects as well. I would not envision where we do all small projects and no big ones, or that we do just big ones and do no small ones. It will be, in my judgment, a mixture.
President Holberg, a follow-up.
And I understand those points, but I guess that I would say, in addition to that, it would be not a good thing if all the metro money went to one huge project. And I can, you know, there's more demand in Greater Minnesota. You know, I can see a scenario where you divide the money up regionally and Metro pools it all together and does one project, and then for all those small contractors in the metropolitan area, far less opportunity to put people to work with their companies. There also has to be a regional balance relative to the size of the projects, too.
Thank you. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, Chairman Bell, I may be following up on remarks you made at the outset. It's not about the highway portion, it's about the transit portion. I understand in the Recovery Act, the transit portions are in flux. We'll learn even more later today and tomorrow. But I have just want to follow up. Does the Metropolitan Council have a list of potential projects to be funded under the Federal Recovery Act?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, we do.
Chairman Bell, is that list been shared with the legislature?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it has not been broadly disseminated because it is at best a working draft. Perhaps I overstated when I called it a list. It is a working draft that is constantly in flux. And it's important for me to add at this point, too, what I have said publicly. My number one, two, and three priority for any stimulus dollars is to use for our operating deficit. The $45 million that we currently face in the deficit that I think is apt to go up with the February forecast, to me, is my number one priority for the use of stimulus dollars. It makes no sense to me, a representative, to hire a construction worker at the same time we lay off a bus driver. And our bus system currently, as it's configured, disproportionately serves low-income, transit-dependent populations. And I want to ensure a continuation of services to that population.
And, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to, and I know you have a follow-up, but I, Reverend Moore has a follow-up, but I did want to just take this opportunity to say that once we knew that there was going to be, you know, a significant federal recovery effort underway, I did correspond with Mr. Shetland. This was around the holidays, really the last week or so of December, and he did forward to me a list. I thought that was important to have. But again, since we're not doing earmarks and we don't really have a process, it's a little premature to sort of identify those as specifically funded projects. But I did want to thank the Met Council. I thought this was a helpful step in our ability to try to have more transparency and dialogue with our agencies. We haven't had quite as good a luck with MnDOT. I know there's a separate set of issues with them. But I did want to express my appreciation for Mr. Shetman's timely response to that request. And I imagine if anyone on this committee was interested in at least that very preliminary list, he would be happy to send it or I could send it. There were some projects that I think are very familiar to people and others that, aren't. But we're looking at park and rides. We're looking at the Central Corridor. Things of that nature.
And Mr. Chair, if I might follow up on that. Chairman Bell, I don't mean that to be a critique. I'm actually glad that you all have ideas about where transit money might go in the Metropolitan Council's area. MnDOT doesn't have a statewide transit plan. I don't know what MnDOT's going to do in terms of suggesting projects or ideas for federal recovery money. And my concern as an out-state member is that transit money is not going to end up out-state. That transit money is going to end up where there's a plan, where there are proposals, where there are potential lists. So I don't fault Metropolitan Council. I'm actually concerned that there's only one region has a plan and a list of proposals right now, and the rest of the state does not. I'm very concerned about the lack of balance as we move forward here. So that's what I'm trying to keep my eye on, and that's why I want to know if you had a list. Has that list been shared with the governor's office as well?
Yes, it has. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative, the list has.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, we have a couple more people are interested. Representative David Zellers, and then Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Chairman Bell or Director McCarthy. I don't want to just fly by this air quality conformity satisfied bullet point you have here, because I'm very concerned about good air quality and conforming with the federal direction and so forth. And when I think about this, is I think one of the big players in cleaning this up was the use of E10, E20, E85 ethanol, and that's why the industry was developed in the state, was to clean up metropolitan air. And my question is when it comes to the air quality conformity satisfied, my question is by how much? How much have we conformed by? Are we close just about going over and be in trouble again, or because of the wise use of our ethanol in the 7 County Metro and indeed across the state, we have cleaned up the air in the 7 County Metro? How close are we to going out of compliance as opposed to being under?
So an important question, because I know that we were very close to being a non-attainment area at one time, and so where are we at with that?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative David, I cannot tell you a metric measure here today, and I'd be happy to get that to you. What I can tell you is basically for all federally funded projects, we must run them through the model to make sure that the program of projects will meet the required air quality index for the region. And what we did here is with the about a dozen projects, we ran as if we added any one of them. It was on a case-by-case basis. So the numbers would vary depending on which project. That's another point I can make. But I can certainly get that for you, but I don't know that exactly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For your call, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Zellers and then Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go back to the economic stimulus, the 12 projects and the one that we'll probably pick or select. And Chairman Bell, Director McCarthy, can we have a preliminary heat before we get to the final race? I mean, is there a way that maybe under some of your qualification rules, the TAB process, whatever it may be, we can look at a half dozen of them as maybe not quite there yet, or based on some of the way you rank them, I guess, so that we don't have a 12-horse race the entire time. It gets down to the end, and we're still debating what qualifies. We can have a first round of cuts, maybe to get down to a final five or six or four, whatever it may be.
Chairman Bell?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, as Ms. McCarthy stated, part of the determination of which projects are selected will be based how the legislation is written. I think it is fair to say that the administration, meaning both MnDOT and the Met Council, will have recommendations or have weigh in on this. But I can assure you that it's going to be a transparent and inclusive process. In other words, we're not going to go off in the room and make the decision and then say this is the one or two projects plus the smaller projects, which I think are going to be a part of a package as a fait accompli. It will go through some type of deliberative process. I think it is quite likely that it will go through the TAB process, which is, of course, I'd like to think is well accepted, broadly inclusive, and a transparent process. But it is hard for me to make a firm commitment to that at this time because we don't know the configuration of the dollars that will be coming to the states. But to the point of, will it be open and transparent? Yes. Will we, meaning the administration, have firm ideas and recommendations? I think that you can count on that. We definitely have ideas about that, and I think it's appropriate that we do bring those forward.
Thank you. And again, I appreciate the question, Representative Zellers, because this is going to be very important for us to be partners in this process. As I said before, I'm very pleased so far with our work with the Met Council on this and the openness that your agency has shown. I think Representative Morrow's question speaks to the fact that I think we need to play some catch-up with MnDOT on that. But this is very, very important to the legislature to be full partners in this, and we will continue to seek information, and people are very, very, it's not just the highways. We're going to get to the transit projects hopefully in the next few minutes. But there's a lot at stake and a lot riding on the stimulus package. I'll take Representative Portman and then Representative Champion, and then I would like to move on. We'll do minutes, and then we'll do the second part of your presentation on transit. So Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chairman. But I think the federal money, it looks like we won't have the choice between laying off a bus driver and hiring a construction worker, and to Representative Morrow's point of the rural transit versus metro transit, I don't think we'll have the choice here to decide those divisions. I think Washington will tell us, you will spend X dollars on highways and you will spend X dollars on transit, and X percent of that will be greater Minnesota versus metro. So some of that, I think, we don't have to worry about arguing amongst ourselves how to divide that up. Our delegation in Washington will make those decisions. But one thing, I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Deputy Commissioner Tani Sahibjian, if you can help us with, is making real clear the criteria that you use to choose the project for the stimulus money. We spent a lot of time telling our constituents at town hall meetings that we don't earmark projects in Minnesota transportation budget, and that those decisions are made on facts and data. And so when you do narrow down the list, and as you do make that decision-making process, a lot of people might understand the TAB process, but I don't think my constituents are in that number. And any information you can give us as to the criteria that you use to make the selection will be very helpful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, a couple of points I think it's important to make. One is about the decisions that will be made, and as I indicated a minute ago, my priority of using these dollars for operating. That has not been determined as yet, but I'll give you an example of something that I would give serious consideration to. For example, if in fact it was determined that we could only use this for transit capital and or shovel-ready projects, I might look at or consider or explore various, for lack of a better term, swap-outs that we could do, so that maybe some of the bonding that we currently do in service for a transit capital, we would use the stimulus dollars to purchase a bus and then use those servicing dollars for operations. We have some flexibility with federal formula dollars to use in transit capital and operations. The money we are currently using for transit capital in these federal formula dollars, we might move over to transit operations and then use the stimulus dollars to fill that in, so that we might, through those type of swap outs, still use the stimulus dollars for transit operations. in terms of, Representative, a specific answer to your question, which I think is very appropriate, what are the principles we're going to use? One, as I mentioned, operating costs. That's, I'm going to be a junkyard dog about focusing in on that. The second is looking at global improvements that improve operational efficiency. How can we bring more juice out of our existing system? And the third one, and this is the one that is important, is not use the dollars to expand our system if, in fact, we don't have accompanying operating costs. This is a major concern. While I'm a big transit fan and a big transit advocate, I don't want to expand our transit system now only to not have the operating resources in the long term. And so I will look at those federal dollars and say, are we buying problems for our regional transit system 3, 5, 10 years out? So those, broadly speaking, those are some principles to guide my thinking in terms of how these could use. I would also welcome the thoughts and the input from the legislature in terms of principles that they think are appropriate as well.
Appreciate that. Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps this could be answered in your next segment, but I'm going to ask it now. Chairman Bell, you talked specifically about low-income public transportation-dependent riders, and I want to know, does the plan consider them, and how recent cuts have challenged identified riders' ability to use public transportation to other areas of the state? And if so, what considerations have been taken, and what will you do going forward that would help us with this unfortunate set of circumstances?
Chairman Bell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Champion, this is an important consideration for me when I look at any kind of restructuring of our transit system or fare increases for our transit system. As I indicated, we are giving some consideration to that. We just had a fare increase October 1st, roughly 25 cents, so we affected a number of different fares. Crudely speaking, it brought in about $7 million. And while I can't take it off the table, given the economic environment we're in, and we haven't seen the February forecast, we consider it for the very reasons you're talking about. But two other points, and then I'd ask Ms. McCarthy to weigh in as well. The Federal Transit Administration is very, very clear that they will not support any build-out of our existing transit system if it is at the expense of our existing transit operations. In other words, we can't cannibalize existing service to expand our service. And so I do have a concern as we plan to open up the North Star commuter rail line in November of this year, that if in fact we are planning on opening that up at the same time, Representative, that we are cutting service or increasing fares, the federal government could conceivably challenge our opening up North Star or Central Corridor or any other lines. And so the federal government shares your concern that we not do that. There is also what is known as Title VI, which essentially, this is part of federal FTA legislation that speaks to economically disadvantaged populations attempting to ensure that the kind of scenario you outlined doesn't take place. So we're mindful of that. I watch that closely for the reasons that you stated.
Thank you. Members, let's, we do have a quorum, and I'm very pleased we've got very good attendance today. So Representative Swales will move the minutes of January 21st, if everyone's had a chance to quickly look over those. Yes, Representative Swales.
Mr. Chair, I believe I was here on the 21st, and my name is once again omitted.
That would be a important amendment. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm new and all that, but yeah, okay. I do have a name and I do show up. So.
Okay. Well, so noted. That's why, members, very important to pay attention to those minutes. It's not simply a perfunctory motion.
I was left out of the one before too, and I looked at who was absent. I saw no one was absent, so I thought I was there. But And I was there.
So,
and I think that one got cleared up by my LA, so.
Okay.
But,
I just see.
I'd like to be noticed at least.
Okay.
Three.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Erdahl.
Perhaps if Representative Torkelson were to wave when he came in the room, it would be helpful.
We'll certainly be announcing his arrival at the next meeting.
Mr. Chairman?
Apparently, Freshman Torkelson did understand the Treats and Rules Committee, part of his coming to the committee, that in the first, second, and third committee meetings, he needed to bring some sort of snack or after lunchtime treat for the members, and apparently...
Otherwise, he's not noted.
Certainly, the lead Republican didn't share that piece of information with
him. You know, the very arcane rules we have here, but good that the people are bringing those forward. Any other discussion of the minutes? Okay. All of those in favor signify, as amended, the minutes as amended, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the motion prevails, and we are certainly going to be noting Representative Torkelson's presence from here on out. What I'd like to do is have Ms. McCarthy finish her presentation as it relates to the transit portion of the plan. I'd like to then set aside some time for additional questions and answers from the committee. And we do have two members of the public that have expressed interest in testifying. I want to make sure we include them. And again, we're shooting for our on-time conclusion at 2:30. So, Ms. McCarthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one last slide here on highways. Just real quickly, we, in our policy plan, have what's called a work program in the appendix, and that's very important. And it outlines things we commit to do before the next update. And three things I'd like to highlight that are very important regarding highways is that we have committed to do what we're calling the Metro Highway System Investment Strategy, and that will provide a greater detail to the long-term vision for the highways. We will be working very closely with MnDOT on that. Just again, getting to a higher level of detail in our recommendations. The second step or work item is to develop a congestion management process. This is a federal mandate out of the current transportation authorization. And so we must do this. MnDOT will have the lead on the item there that is the second bullet to identify more low-cost, high-benefit projects that smooth traffic flow in our region. And then the council will have the lead on the second component, which is to develop a transportation demand management strategy. You might hear the acronym TDM. That's what that is, transportation demand strategy. So we are in the process of hiring consultants to help us with that work. And then the third item, I've already mentioned that we will be reassessing those major projects from our previous plan. And so as you can see at the end here, we have committed in our policy plan the council just adopted to have an amendment in 2010 to incorporate the results of all of this work. That timing should also be good because we will have more information on the economic stimulus package by then, and we can reflect that in the plan. And we would also anticipate the federal transportation bill will be authorized by then.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whenever I see optimized use of shoulders, I get nervous because, of course, when you think about the design of highways, those shoulders were there for a purpose. And now we see it as another lane, because I think that's what optimizing use of shoulders means. And at some point, I'm hoping we're tracking the safety issues around that. The very least of them is when a car is in the right lane and suddenly that bus roars by on their right side when they haven't been aware that we use it for that purpose. But I just don't know if we're monitoring safety of these highways once we use the shoulder in that way.
Ms. McCarthy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, on the shoulder lanes, there is a that is monitored, and actually the track record with buses is very, very good. A greater use, such as the dynamically priced shoulder lane, which a segment is going to be implemented by MnDOT here with the Urban Partnership Agreement, northbound on 35W between 46th Street and downtown Minneapolis, is a demonstration project, and that's exactly one of the things that we need to be looking at, is not only the operational flow, but the safety impact. So that is definitely one of the metrics that will be measured when that lane is implemented. And it'll help
it'll inform us if we can do more of that, or if we do, does it have to be modified in some fashion? But I know that MnDOT is very concurs with the safety importance with any of these projects. And FHWA, too, quite frankly.
Thank you. So let's move on to the transit plan.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On transit, we are continuing the goal that was in the previous plan, which is to double transit ridership by 2030, and we do plan to do that through two major strategies. That is strengthening the Regions bus system and building a network of transit ways. The goal that the council has equates to roughly a 3% growth in ridership on an annual basis. And as you can see here on our chart, we have been in recent years actually exceeding that goal. Just yesterday, our preliminary 2008 ridership came out, and we are at 95 million for 2008, not yet reflected on this chart. And that represents a 6.5% increase over 2007. So once again, the next bar on this chart will be above the red line, which is our goal. We have, in our policy plan, we always reflect the progress that we've had. After we opened Hiawatha in 2004, now we look forward to North Star opening here later this year. Central Corridor is wrapping up preliminary engineering, should be in final design next year, and opening in 2014. And then the 35W and Cedar Avenue BRT corridors are advancing with that urban partnership agreement. And if you take all those projects, they add up to between 90 and 100 miles of transit ways here in the metropolitan area.
Representative Verdahl has a question, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a point I'd like to bring up that I don't mean to belabor, but I belabor points all the time. I forgot. I don't know if you're aware, but we are, we began the concept of a little pro line, which is a transit way to the west. Highway 12, Rosier Northern Railroad going west. And we are, actually, last year we named a corridor, and this year we're trying to develop a study as to the potential of it in the future. So basically, I just wanted you to be aware that we actually are in the throes of trying to plan something, a transit way to the west as well.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Houston.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, I just want Representative Erdahl to know, and Representative Morrow can testify to it, and Representative Welty, that when Representative Erdahl is not at meeting, we speak up for him. And when they're not in attendance, they weren't invited to a meeting the other day when we were discussing corridors like that, and I pointed out that if Representative Dunkey and Representative Erdahl understood they might be left off the map, that they wouldn't be happy. So I thought I should chime in this time and let him know that even though he's not present, we'll all take up that cause, because we do believe in equity in service around the state.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and Representative Erdahl.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hausman. I appreciate that. I frequently need people looking out for me.
Representative Swales. Oh, sorry. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, as another proponent of the Little Crow Transitway, let you know that the 1998 and 1999 and 2000 commuter rail studies identified that as a corridor that has some promise, and there's already some good data. So if anybody wants to look over the commuter rail studies from 98, 99, and 2000, they're in my office.
And, you know, we're getting a little far afield. However, this is an appropriate time perhaps to remind the committee that MnDOT has a rail transit planning process, which I think has some issues associated with it that we will really need to examine in terms of this pace, the different kind of committees that have been established. I know members have some concerns around this table about it, and it's certainly my intention within the month to have a hearing on the rail transit plan. And I think those concerns can be aired, and I think it's in all of our interest to make sure that plan happens sooner than later. And that will have tremendous bearing on the issues that Representative Erdahl is raising. So, Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I think we do need to stress, I mean, the appropriateness of Representative Erdahl raising that is ultimately Greater Minnesota has to connect with the metro area. So those plans, absolutely, I mean, if you are going to be successful, it's got to go somewhere. And so to always think about these two as intersecting, because you need to them to understand if they're going to be a metro route when you hit the seven-county metro area. And that planning together across the state, I think, is a piece that can't fall between the cracks.
Right. And so we it also has bearing on, you know, the Red Rock Corridor and the possible Amtrak alignment to Chicago. So there, Representative Housen's absolutely right. There are a lot of ways in which the statewide rail plan does intersect with our regional transit plan. So, yes, and Representative Welty, now that I mentioned high-speed rail to Chicago.
Chime in since you mentioned that. Just let you know that there are many communities that are looking at the possibility of rail, and I really look forward to that hearing that we're going to have in the future. And Representative Housen, Representative Morrow, and I attended the recent transportation forum that was held to discuss rail, and I really do believe we have to have that discussion here in this committee.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. I really appreciate the three of you attending that, and look forward to some of your comments as we discuss that rail plan. So, Representative Swales is she'll get the next question when we when she re-enters here. But in the meantime, Ms. McCarthy.
Thank you, Chair. Then, just to wrap up on things that are underway or completed, Southwest, led by Hennepin County, is beginning its environmental work. Bottineau, similarly, is undergoing an alternative analysis. Last year, Red Rock completed its AA, and Rustline today is undergoing an alternatives analysis. Issues, I think not surprising to you, as I showed, our ridership continues to grow while we're not really able to grow the system too much, so the demand is there. Our revenue sources are declining while we're continuing to have our operating costs projected to exceed their revenues. Land use, much of it is not really supportive of transit. We're making progress in the region with an understanding of that relationship, but we still need to continue to focus on that. And we have a chapter in our policy plan dealing with land use. And the last thing is that congestion hinders fast, reliable transit. It's really important that transit either be in a dedicated right-of-way or a shared right-of-way, such as a hot lane where we know it'll travel at posted speed. So that is very important in our plan, and we focus on that.
And Representative Wells is back, so I'd like, she had not wanted to ask a question about the, I think the corridor slide, so we can refer back to that.
Well, yes, and it's probably a bigger question than just the corridor, but I think I really, Representative McFarland and Housman, we represent the East Metro. I will have to say that those of us who serve in the legislature and saw the plan, the 2030 plan, and live in the East Metro, we were in dismay because we feel that it is, in some ways, an equity issue, that there is far more attention being paid to projects in the West Metro than there is. And it was kind of astounding. We are working very, very hard to try to pinpoint things. I-94 corridor is very important to us. But I will have to say, just this morning, I attended a meeting for 2 hours at the Washington County Government Center, and the whole focus of that meeting was county agencies focusing on transportation needs. And a survey has been done in Washington County that shows that there are, of the respondents, of course it's not a scientific test by any means, but of the respondents, 30% of those people do not get medical attention and are unable to take care of personal needs because they have no access to transportation. And so for me, when we talk about this issue, it's a quality of life issue, it's a quality of life problem. I care deeply about the people who live along I-94. You were very helpful and supportive in getting additional buses to Landfall, a manufactured home site right by 3M. That has helped those people in that community so much. So we have people who are, I mean, Washington County is such a strange county. We're an inverted L, and we're very long and skinny. And it is the people who are going from east to west have mobility. People going from north to south do not. So all I'm trying to say to you is that we in the East Metro need some attention as well. It is a gateway corridor coming from Chicago. We feel like we have as many cars and trucks entering through Washington County as there are entering from the west into the Twin Cities and from the south. So my plea to you is, if there is any way to adjust your plan, if there is any way for you to take into consideration projects that would improve the quality of life of our citizens, then I would be incredibly grateful and would love to have more opportunities to speak with you about that.
Ms. Bell or Ms. McCarthy?
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and Representative Quills. I do think that after the draft plan had been out, as Chair Bell said in his opening remarks, we did actually meet with some East Metro representatives, and as a result, our plan has been modified, and we continue to hear the messages it's delivered.
Chair Representative, I would only add, in the interest of time, because I know where the hour is getting late, I take the issues that you raise quite seriously. I think our transit system has to be a regional system, meaning that it has to have regional balance. And when people raised a great deal of concern about the original configuration of our map, and we took great efforts to change that. I hope that is reflected also in the service and Forest Lake coming down that we've initiated and supported, as well as many of the park and rides that we've put on the East Metro side. That concern, however, does need to be tempered or balanced with the fact that we need efficiency to run our system, and land planning is an important component of that. And so communities that do want additional transit service, and we're seeing that all over, our ridership is up by a significant amount, we ask a bit of a quid pro quo, that they do consider land planning. It gives us the type of density that allows us to bring a little bit more economies of scale to the provision of transit. But the bottom line is that we have to have regional balance. Everyone has to feel like our transit system is there to meet their needs.
And I'm thank you very much, Mr. Bell, and I'm very pleased that we're having a conversation about land use planning here and its relationship to transit, and everyone will have a chance, including the Met Council, to weigh in on a pretty important bill that will be introduced in the next couple of weeks that makes some of those connections, and particularly how it relates to global warming. So I'm pleased that that discussion is on the table, and we're certainly going to be pursuing that in the coming weeks. So let's continue on with Ms. McCarthy's presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, you'll recall there were two strategies to our meeting our ridership goal. One was a strengthened bus system, and the second was transit waves. I think it's fair to say transit waves get most of the attention. And I really want to emphasize, and I think this speaks a bit to Representative Champion's question as well as Representative Swale's question, not everyone is going to be served by a transit way, and the overall transit system is very important to make sure our whole region has some level of service. And therefore, our plan puts quite a bit of emphasis on the bus system, the base bus system, which today carries the majority of riders in our region. So we have a proposal in our plan looking ahead where we would support the transitway investment. It has to be a well-designed interconnecting system, but we need to really grow our service on the local routes, that's both urban local and suburban local, and expand the coverage. We have a plan for arterial corridor improvements, more of those mainline urban streets, and then the express system needs to also grow. We have an extremely successful express system in this region, but the demand just keeps growing, and so we need improvements in all these areas. The ADA services will grow. In fact, last year they were up 12% compared to the previous year. We are federally mandated to deliver ADA services, American with Disabilities Act. So again, that goes kind of hand in hand with the regular transit system.
And then just Ms. McCarthy, again, looking at the clock here,
yes.
It's possible for you to wrap up in about the next 5 minutes, and maybe members, if you could hold your questions, if there's any remaining questions for Ms. McCarthy, we can take those at about 2:15, and then I want to have the rest of the time reserved for the members of the public that wanted to testify. So,
certainly, Mr. Chair. And then just that we also acknowledge in our plan to explore some long-distance express service. This map is not to go into detail. It's just for you to realize we do have a long-range plan for the base bus system. And you can see it's pretty extensive. The transitways, our definition of transitways in our plan, and this is consistent with our previous plan, that transitways include commuter rail, light rail, bus rapid transit, and express bus with transit advantages. And then we do, this was, while we mentioned intercity passenger rail initially, we did beef this language up in response to the comment that we do recognize intercity passenger rail, which would be led by others. MnDOT is the lead for the state on that. If that comes to fruition, it does definitely impact the ability to deliver transitways, particularly commuter rail, here in the metropolitan area. This is the list, then, of transitway recommendations in our plan. The top grouping you're very familiar with. The second grouping is those that are either underway right now or that we would propose to have a study done for mode and alignment. So we would be looking at various modes such as LRT, busway, bus rapid transit, or commuter rail in those studies. Next, we've developed 9 urban arterial streets that we think would be great candidates for arterial BRT. These are not nearly the level of investment as a commuter rail or light rail line, but these are really high ridership corridors where some improvements are very much warranted. And then again, the express bus corridors, we need to continue to build more facilities and improve the travel time advantage with those. And lastly, we recognize, as Representative Hausman pointed out a few moments ago, the urban cities are the key destinations, and therefore the hubs and those to bring all of this transit together is very important. So we have identified Union Depot in St. Paul and a new intermodal station in Minneapolis as part of our plan. This is a map, and this was changed from the original draft, and that basically summarizes the corridors I just mentioned. From a funding perspective, what we can afford with our reasonable assumption of funding out to 2030 is that after Central Corridor, we could actually build 3 more transit LRT transitways in this region by 2030, and the time frame of those is laid out here on this slide. But again, 3 more after Central. We could afford 1 commuter rail line, and this would presume that intercity passenger rail preceded commuter rail in that corridor, thus, quite frankly, funding quite a bit of the capital improvements that would be needed for commuter rail. We could fund 4 highway bus rapid transit corridors and 9 arterial corridors. So while we have the capital funding identified for this program, please note that last point, which is that the operating costs are not fully funded, and that's also with the bus system. Mr. Chair, I will not go through this slide. It just summarizes our cost estimating that got us to what we arrived at in the previous slide. And then again, note that the operating costs for both the bus system and bus transitway expansion are not fully funded. They are partially funded. And Mr. Chair, I think given the time that we will not discuss the other modes. They are important, and there's information in your presentation.
Thank you. And members, again, you have the written presentation, and it is available online. And I also would add that for those of you who are on the Finance Committee, there'll be a more extensive conversation about the transit budget and the deficit in proposals to alleviate that in Chairman Leader's Committee. And all of you, of course, are welcome to attend those meetings and certainly follow them. And it's an opportunity for me to remind you that Congressman Oberstar is going to be here tomorrow at 12:30, I believe, in Room 15. And again, for those of you who are on the Policy Committee but not on the Finance Committee, if you have some free time tomorrow, I would strongly urge you to come to that meeting. There's no better person in the country to update us about the federal stimulus package and to hear your ideas, questions, and concerns in Congressman Oberstar. So you'll be fresh off of this vote today, and we couldn't think of a better person in a more timely way to speak to us. So just again, a reminder, 12:30 tomorrow, I believe it's in room 15 over at the Capitol. Are there any questions of the committee for Ms. McCarthy or Chairman Bell before the public testimony today? Any final questions or thoughts? I really appreciate the committee's engagement in this. We had a very rich discussion today. I consider it sort of a first step to an ongoing conversation with the Met Council this year. Any other questions of our Met Council guests today? Okay, well, with that, thank you, and very appreciate your thorough presentation. There's a lot to chew on here, and members, that we have two people from the public that are interested in commenting on what we heard today. I can call on them together, Dave Van Haddam from Transit for Livable Communities and Ethan Foley from Fresh Energy. So they'll be making their comments, and we'll take the last 15 minutes for Q&A with them.
Mr. Chair, thank you for your time. We'll actually, we have a Met Council meeting coming.
Okay, well, so this all worked out pretty well with the timing. And I'd like to introduce to the committee as well, if you don't know him already, he'll be coming around and introducing himself as well, I know, Mr. Judd Chetman from the Met Council, and he's sitting down and now standing up. Okay. And Mr. Weaver's here, too. Mr. Weaver is the regional administrator and a face you should get to know as well. Mr. Van Haddam, looks like you're leading off, so welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We'll try to be brief, but there's a lot.
You state your name and organizational affiliation for the record.
Yeah, again, my name is Dave Van Haddam. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities. Transit for Livable Communities is a nonprofit. We have about 10,000 members throughout the region. We work with a number of other partners in the environmental, faith, labor, community on this transit issue. Ethan from Fresh Energy will follow my comments. I do want to say from TLC's perspective a couple of things. One, we've commented very extensively on this plan, so if you want to see more of our thinking on this, it's available at the Met Council Data Center. We also did a report last summer that I think looked at a lot of these issues in great detail that's available on our website. What I wanted to touch on pretty briefly this afternoon was two key things in regards to what we heard here this afternoon. One is the long-term issue and vision that we heard about, but also the short-term concerns regarding the bus operating deficit and the stimulus. In this report, one of the somewhat controversial recommendations we made was that MnDOT and the Met Council should jointly report to you at least every other year on this topic of our regional transit system and vision. And I just want to draw to your attention, because I think it's so critical when we think about vision, that we know where we've been in order to think about where we're going. And so in the presentation today, and I know this is a challenging business, thinking about our vision and where things are going with transportation, but on page 5 of the presentation today, you were told that travel has been increasing much faster than highway expansion. And we would direct your attention to the handout by MnDOT a week ago, January 21st, which in fact showed that vehicle miles of travel, so how much people are traveling in aggregate, has actually been flat for 3 years and is likely to be flat for a fourth year. That's not only happening in Minnesota, it's happening nationally. And what that means is when it's aggregate travel, it means that individual travel is actually going down. And if you recall last week, Connie Sahijib said a major reason for that was the increase in fuel prices. So our vision starts from that assumption that we don't know that people are going to be demanding a whole lot more travel. Sorry. And in fact, that should really color this goal that we heard first and foremost, which is person throughput. If this trend is going to continue the way it has the last 4 or 5 years, person throughput, one, is going to be a whole lot easier, but it really should be our future and what we're focusing on. And we believe that's the case for a variety of reasons. The economy's telling us that. ASTO, no radical transit group, just came out and said the investment in transit will have a higher return on investment than the investment in highways. We all know that as well in terms of the energy efficiency piece. That's going to be the linchpin of the future economy, And so, again, making the transit investment priority is critical. And third, the silver tsunami. The share of the population that's going to be elderly is growing quickly. And as one of my board members says, we all hopefully will live long enough to have our children and our friends take our keys away from us. Just to quickly touch on a couple of the short-term concerns. And again, our vision of transit for livable communities at Transit Partners is basically to speed up this plan. We think both on the rail side and most critically on the short term on the bus operating, we can do this a lot more quickly than we have been. And you really took a large role, leadership step last year in the transportation funding bill to move us in that direction. But a little bit on the short-term concern with the bus operating. We simply can't allow cuts to our bus system or fare increases when the public out there is demanding so much more transit service, 7% increase in the last year. They just keep telling us over and over and over that this is what they want. In a national poll regarding the stimulus, 80% of the public, by a National Realtors Association poll, said they would prefer to see road maintenance expanding transit rather than building new highways. So we have to address the operating. Regarding the stimulus, I am very encouraged to hear Chair Bell say, and say it repeatedly in many locations, that the number one priority, I heard it, I thought very clearly, the number one, two, and three priorities are the transit operating budget. I have just two things to close with on that note. Many of us attended the public hearing on the amendment to the transportation policy plan. That amendment was made specifically because they were concerned about highway expansion. It would have been much better if at that time somebody from the Met Council got up and said to the public, this is our number, first, second, and third priority. Because it turns out that 24 of the 25 people that testified said that should be your first priority. And we think it's much more than just that. That's just a representative sample of where the public's at. We have to make the transit investment first. Yeah, that's it. I got ahead of myself with that quote on the National Realtors Association. That was related to the stimulus. So in terms of vision, in terms of the operating, and in terms of the stimulus, we think they all work together to provide a region that provides, as Arlene McCarthy started with, more transportation choices for all of our residents. It also helps our economy and helps our energy efficiency in the future global economy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Hattem. Representative Hausman has a question, and Representative Ford.
Your reference to the amendment to the transportation policy plan?
Yes.
Help me with that.
Well, what they did was they made an amendment in January that the Met Council, as a full council, passed about a week ago. And the amendment, by their overview that was provided to the council during the comment period, this was on the previous plan document in the fall, an issue was raised about how the region could respond to the potential availability of additional federal funding for highway projects, since the proposed fiscally constrained draft no longer contained highway expansion, blah, blah, blah. But, so, appropriately, perhaps, they said we want to be ready for federal money that might come down the pipe for highway expansion. My point is simply that when you go out to have a public hearing on this regional vision where we're telling the public this is what we're doing in a metropolitan region, it would be helpful to remind them the broader plan priorities if we understood them correctly about transit operating, about person throughput. Representative Hausman, the amendment was the 12 expansion projects that you've talked about today, whether or not what should be in there and when and how they might happen.
Representative Portman, quickly, because we want to hear from Mr. Hawley as well.
Right, I can follow up with Dave after the hearing on this, but I could notice already, does VMT include miles of bus travel? For example, if I get on Metro Bus from Brooklyn Park to come over to the Capitol, is that a vehicle mile traveled counted into that total just the same as if I get into my car?
Chair and Representative Portman, I will get back to you on that. I believe the answer is no, but I'm not certain. When we asked about this after the meeting last week, they said the figures were from Federal Highway Administration. It seems to me it would get a little complicated if you started counting all the trips that we do, say, for example, in the travel behavior inventory, walking and biking. I'm not certain that is, but that in fact is one of the emphases that we're trying to raise with this other initiative that the chair referenced, the Building Sensible Communities, is that we actually ought to be thinking about vehicle miles driven and making that distinction, which is very critical.
Thank you. That's a good question. Mr. Folley, welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name and organization.
Sure. Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. My name is Ethan Folley, and I work at Fresh Energy, which is a statewide organization working for a clean energy system. I just want to first follow up with Representative Hortman's question. Vehicle miles traveled are calculated based on measures in the road, so it's just a vehicle passing by. It's not somebody out there counting cars, it's just a bus. But if you're on a bus with 40 other people, that means that 41 people are moving in one vehicle versus one person in a car. So I just want to start with that. And then earlier today we heard from Representative Swales that transportation options, it's a quality of life issue at the very core. This is a quality of life issue. I'm going to start first with what we're facing. This biennium, we heard from Chair Bell that transit operations in the metropolitan region are facing a deficit. We talked about, Representative Champion mentioned the need for transit-dependent people to get to work. One of the things that hasn't come up today is just the overall need for people to get to work. 75% of transit riders in the metropolitan region use transit to get to work. During this challenging economic time, we need to ensure that we don't cut back our transit service and make it harder for people to get to their jobs. So I encourage the legislature this session to work with the Metropolitan Council on a workable solution to the transit operating deficit to ensure that we don't have to cut back transit service. Now I'm going to move into the vision. We've heard from Ms. McCarthy that we're now focusing on managing congestion. That's a very important goal and a very important transition. We're no longer looking back to an era of highway expansion where we try to solve congestion, but we're looking forward to a multimodal solution that helps us manage congestion. She also mentioned that it needs to be strategic, that it needs to be to optimize our resources, and it needs to be efficient. One of the things she talked about as part of their continuing process is a congestion management plan. The council will be creating this over the next 2 years. Part of that will be MnDOT and the council relooking the highway expansion project, and it's a very admirable goal. That a congestion management process cannot be only focused on highways. Today we saw it as a highway project, highway program. Congestion management needs to be multimodal. We need to look at all the solutions, potential solutions. We need to look at transit ways. We need to look at bus service. We need to work at walking and biking and strategic highway investments and telecommuting, as we heard earlier. So when that process moves forward, I urge that we make sure that it's multimodal. And I also urge that we've heard a lot about transparency related to the stimulus. I think we need this congestion management plan as an important regional investment and important regional plan to be very transparent, and that the process doesn't just happen at the end, but that the public process, the legislature, and other key stakeholders are involved throughout that process. And I just want to end on two points that came up. Chair Bell and Representative Hornstein mentioned the importance of land use in land use patterns and transit. I just want to echo the need to have our transit system supported by developments that allows us to have options for how we get around. And then Representative Hornstein also brought up global warming pollution. Right now in the Transportation Policy Plan, it's been a very cursory mention. But as a state agency, we feel that the Metropolitan Council should take into account the statewide goal of global warming pollution reduction. That's a state goal put down by the legislature. It should be incorporated as part of their transportation policy plan and future documents. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pauly, and I do appreciate that last comment you made about global warming, and something that also I think doesn't get enough conversation when we talk about transit and other modes, especially biking, walking, etc., is the impact on oil, and particularly our importation of foreign oil. Congressman Oberstar mentioned the other day something like a 10% mode shift towards non-motorized and transit options can result in a 40% reduction in Persian Gulf oil imports. And so this is also a really important part of the conversation, and I'm sure he'll mention that tomorrow. So members, we are right on time. I appreciate everybody's attendance and our good conversation. Next week, tentatively, we will hear possibly one or two bills. We'll also hear from the county's Transit Improvement Board and have a conversation about rural transit. So those are two issues very much related to what we did today. And with that, I will adjourn the meeting.
Did you guys get the